The following is a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting. It's time for To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital. A weekly visit with the healthcare professionals at Rush Memorial to introduce you to the employees and the various programs at the hospital. And now, your host, Mary Frances Friedel.
We are here today with Dr. Gregory Hyde, the ear, nose, and throat specialist at Rush Memorial Hospital. And Dr. Hyde is here today to talk to us about allergies. Good morning, Dr. Hyde.
Good morning, Mary Frances.
Thank you so much for coming in. I know that a lot of people here have a lot of allergies. I know that I do. I was just wondering if you could explain, how are allergies diagnosed?
Allergies are very prevalent. It's estimated that about a third of the population has allergies. So, and allergy medicines are some of the most common drugs taken throughout the United States. Figuring out whether or not you have an allergy is actually more detective work than it is, say, lab work. And so that was the way I was trained, was a good history will help you determine if there's an allergic component. So anytime you have a symptom that tends to follow exposure to a certain substance and it's repetitive, then that's a good indication that there may be an allergic response there. For example, every time you dust, you start sneezing, then there's a chance that you're allergic to the dust. Or every time you mow the lawn, you get congested, you get the idea.
So what are some of the common allergic symptoms? You just discussed a couple of them.
Allergies are basically a kind of a hypersensitivity or exaggerated response. And we think of it as being primarily the immune system, but it's actually the nervous system as well. So it can cause all kinds of imbalances of the immune system that can manifest as even frequent infections, viral infections. For example, I've had patients who've had warts all over their hands, and once we figured out they had allergies, their warts went away because their immune system wasn't distracted with all these allergies. So there can be all kinds of symptoms of weakness of the immune system. In general, though, the main mediator of our allergies is a substance, a messenger, if you will, called histamine. And that's why antihistamines are used to try to combat allergy symptoms. Histamine causes inflammation in the body, and it causes barriers to break down to fluid. So it causes fluid to flow, say, out of capillaries, which are small blood vessels, into the skin. When that happens, we develop something called a hive, which is a raised red itchy bump on the skin. Histamine is also a nerve neurotransmitter. It interacts with our nervous system. And on the nerve endings, it'll cause itching. Inside the brain, it actually can cause excitation of the brain, which can lead to different problems, including headaches.
So I guess the most famous allergic reaction is the anaphylactic shock that I guess some people have from bee stings or peanut allergies. Can you explain what that is?
Histamine is normally contained in little cells inside our body known as mast cells. And so the body, as it makes the histamine, transports it inside these little bubbles, if you will, called mast cells. And that's their function, is to act as reservoirs of histamine. On the surface of these cells are antibodies, specific proteins, and it's a very specific antibody known as IgE or immunoglobulin E. And these are the antibodies that our body makes in response to an allergic stimulation. They coat the outsides of these little histamine warehouses, if you will. If an allergen comes along and binds to those IgE antibodies, then that triggers that cell to rupture, to open up and release histamine. And so if you get a lot of those triggered and they release a lot of histamine all at once, then your body has trouble keeping fluid inside your blood vessels. You become very leaky and your blood pressure drops, and that can be life-threatening. And so to counteract that, we use things like adrenaline and antihistamines to try and block that reaction when we know it happens. So people with a history of anaphylaxis are usually prescribed an adrenaline pen, or what's known as an EpiPen. They usually carry it with them or in close proximity so that if they have a sudden reaction, a bee sting, or get exposed to something that they know they have this type of reaction to, like peanuts, that can be immediately administered to them and save their life.
Can all, in just any allergen, cause an anaphylactic shock?
No, that's a great question. And in my 25 years of experience as an allergist, it appears to me that it's The two main categories of allergens that cause this are things that are ingested. So we can certainly have anaphylactic reactions to certain foods, peanuts being a really common one. But I've also treated patients who had anaphylaxis to, say, cow's milk, dairy products, that type of thing. The other is things that are injected into the body. Insect stings would be an example of that type of an injection. Some people can have anaphylaxis to bee or wasp stings, or bites from like fire ants can sometimes cause severe reactions. We also see anaphylaxis to things like penicillin when they're injected into the body as well. So when we inject things into the body, we bypass the normal checks and balances systems that nature has given us, that God has given us to keep us from having a severe exaggerated reaction to things.
So if you do have, if a patient does have allergies, how are they treated?
It kind of depends on how severe the symptoms are. So if you have some mild seasonal allergies are usually to things that are blooming, pollens. And these are very small pollens, not pollens that are carried by insects like bees. So you're never allergic to your roses, in other words, but things like grasses.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, grasses and trees, things that don't use insects to carry their pollen, where they release big, large quantities of pollen and then rely on the wind to carry the pollen. So to be carried by the wind, things have to be very small and very non-sticky, and that's why they can get into us and create allergy symptoms. So with mild seasonal allergies, then you know, you can take antihistamines. Some people will use steroid nasal sprays, all of which are over the counter now. And that's adequate for the few weeks of the year during the peak of the bloom season to control their symptoms. And that's fine. People who have more severe allergies where they have multiple seasonal allergies, like every season they are allergic to like trees in the spring and grasses in the summer and the weeds in the fall, then they're going to probably want a little bit more help. And that's where doing some allergy testing can come into play and be very, very helpful. Knowing what you're allergic to allows you to then take steps to decrease your exposure to them. A very common example is dust mites. Dust mites are one of the more common allergens. They're not just on your furniture and on the floor. The dust mites actually are there because they scavenge the dead cells that flake off our body every day. They're kind of nature's housekeepers, if you will. Their main place where they like is on our furniture, but particularly our bed, our pillows and our mattresses. It's estimated that the weight of a mattress doubles almost every 5 years due to the dust mites in it. So they can be pretty prolific. If you develop a dust mite allergy, then that can, you spend 8 hours in your bed every night. That can be a huge load on your immune system toward your overall allergic response to even other things that you experience during the daytime because you're being aggravated all night long. So there are ways to manage dust mites. If you do have that sensitivity, you can get covers for your mattress and pillows, and you can treat your bedding every week to kill all the dust mites, and your allergy life will change. You'll feel so much better, and even your sensitivities to pollens and foods and other things will change because your immune system isn't all revved up all the time. But doing all that work may not help you if you don't have a dust mite allergy. So knowing what you're allergic to, it allows you to focus your efforts in areas that are going to make a big difference for your health.
So then you do testing on patients to find out what they're allergic to?
The two main types of tests that are currently available, there's a blood test that can be done. Patients who have a history of anaphylaxis or severe allergic reactions, sometimes that's the safest way to do it. Draw a sample of blood, send it to the lab. Let the lab run the test on it. There's no risk of triggering a bad reaction in the patient when you do that. You can then get the information that you need to do both avoidance and to do something called immunotherapy, which we'll talk about here in just a moment. The other type of testing usually involves introducing a little bit of the allergen into the skin, and that can be done with a prick technique. We have these newer devices that will put 10 little pricks on the skin at one time. It feels like being poked with a toothpick. It's not very painful. It doesn't draw any blood. And it's very fast because you can do 10 pricks basically with one exposure. So you can get all the tests done on the individual in a matter of minutes. And then you watch them for about 10 minutes to see if the body reacts to any of them. And then that gives you the information you need both to avoid and to potentially do treatment. Sometimes intradermal testing is done also where we inject a very small amount actually into the skin. And that's helpful for other types of allergens, particularly mold allergies, in my experience.
So then after you know what someone's allergic to and you know that it's severe enough that they're going to need more serious treatment, what are the choices?
So I always recommend instituting environmental controls, trying to decrease exposure as much as possible. That's a big part of controlling the symptoms. We have the option of doing something called immunotherapy. Most prevalent form of immunotherapy in the United States is called subcutaneous immunotherapy. That's where the allergist mixes up a vial of the things that you've tested positive to, the allergy extracts, at the right doses, and then that's administered by an injection under the skin, usually on a weekly basis. Every time you come in, you try to give just a little bit more of that allergen, starting just below the threshold of the allergy, and that's how you train the body to become less sensitive to the allergen. The other techniques that are available, but less prevalent in the United States, but used more in Europe, are sublingual immunotherapy. This is kind of the same idea, but instead of being done by injection, it's mixed up in a sweet-tasting syrup and then squirted under the tongue. There's a certain type of cell in the body that will present the antigens to the immune system in such a way to kind of negate the allergic response. And the highest concentration of those cells is actually in the floor of the mouth. So it actually makes pretty good sense to put it there. There are some in the skin as well, but not nearly as high a concentration as under the tongue. And so in many countries in Europe, the sublingual immunotherapy has pretty well replaced the injection therapy. It has the added benefits of being very cost-effective. It can be self-administered at home. There's never been a reported case of anaphylaxis to it, to my knowledge. You know, it's great for kids, and it doesn't involve coming to a doctor's office to get a shot because of the low risk of anaphylaxis.
Well, I can see where the no shot part would be extremely popular.
Right.
So which do you use?
I use the sublingual. When I first started as an allergist, the first 10 years I did injection therapies, and I got pretty good results for my patients, but it's literally a pain because you're getting a shot, but you also have to spend 30 to 40 minutes in my office every week. That means taking time off of work and school. And there's cost to that. There's also copays that are required by insurance to be paid every time you come in for the shot. It's very expensive, both the time off of work as well as the actual cost. Yeah. So it's estimated that injection therapies run about $5,000 to $6,000 a year. Some of that is covered by insurance, but much of it ends up going to deductibles, which seem to be getting higher and higher every year. So by comparison, we can do sublingual immunotherapy for a fraction of that.
Sounds like it's a very patient-friendly treatment.
It is. And I find more patients are compliant with it. When I was giving injection therapy, even though I felt like I was doing a pretty good job, could only keep maybe 15-20% of patients going more than a year. And it usually takes more than a year of therapy to get to the point where you can stop and have the treatment hold. With sublingual immunotherapy, I find it just the opposite. I have probably over 85% of patients that are happy to continue to do it because they feel the benefit and it's so easy to do.
After a patient has immunotherapy, can the allergy come back?
The immune system, it doesn't have the best long-term memory. So we've all had, been given like tetanus shots, things like that, right? And so you get a tetanus shot, it protects you against the tetanus bacteria, but that effect wears off after about 10 years and you have to get a booster. The same can be true with allergy immunotherapy as well, to where if we can get you to the point where we've corrected the imbalance, over time that effect can become less and less. I've practiced in a couple areas where I was there long enough to where my early patients, I got them to where they didn't have allergens. And then about 7-8 years later, they came back and said, yeah, doc, you remember you said they might come back? Well, they are. The nice thing is that you've, with the immunotherapy, you've kind of already built the factories to suppress the allergens. You just need to fire them up again. So you can actually quickly get them back in good control of their allergies and kind of boost them back up to where then they can get back off the treatment and be good for another 8 to 10 years, in my experience.
I have heard of pre-season allergy treatment. Can you explain what that is?
Most people don't really think about getting their allergies helped out until their allergies are horrible. And the problem with going and starting immune therapy then is you're already getting a nose full of stuff every time you walk outside. And so your immune system is already kind of ramped up and very agitated, and it's hard to quiet that down. The best, so the next allergy season we're going to come into will be the tree season. when the trees start blooming. Now is the time to prepare for the tree season because there's no tree pollens right now. And so we can actually have the full attention of the immune system and we can get people started on treatment and built up so that when the trees start blooming, they're already going to be protected.
Well, that sounds like that would make for a much more pleasant spring.
It would.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Dr. Hyde. And it's, as always, a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Mary Frances.
You can listen to past shows of To Your Health. Log on to RushMemorial.com and click on podcasts. Join us again next week for another visit with Rush Memorial Hospital. It's To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital on Hometown Country 94.3 WIFE. The proceeding was a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting.